fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's begin here in Washington, where you might say Major League Baseball's 89th annual All-Star Game was a smashing success. A sellout crowd of almost 44,000 packed Nationals Park, located within walking distance of our Voice of America headquarters in Southwest Washington. And the baseball fans saw the American League All-Stars defeat the National League All-Stars 8-6 in 10 innings. An All-Star game record 10 home runs were smashed at the ballpark. Houston Astros teammates Alex Bregman and George Springer hit back-to-back homers off Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Ross Stripling in the top of the 10th inning to lift the American League to victory. Talk to us about your home run, Alex.
I took a cutter down the middle of the first pitch and then kind of went into battle mode and just was trying to put a line drive in play, and it left the yard. It was crazy.
Earlier in the game, in the second inning, the American League got another home run from New York Yankees outfielder Aaron Judge.
Before that happened, I was kind of getting ready to go hit, and Verlander said that, he's like, I got a really good feeling, man. I think you're going to hit a homer this at bat, so just get ready. So that first one I fouled off, I was like, there's no chance, you know, the way Scherzer was showing it, but I was able to barrel up that second one. It was a pretty cool moment.
Aaron Judge hit his All-Star Game home run off Washington Nationals star Max Scherzer, the three-time Cy Young Award winner who was pitching in his team's home ballpark. In the first inning, Scherzer struck out the game's first two batters, Mookie Betts of the Boston Red Sox and Jose Altuve of the reigning World Series champion Houston Astros. The next batter was outfielder Mike Trout of the Los Angeles Angels, who has been described as the best player in baseball today. Scherzer talks about pitching to Trout.
The stadium was going nuts, and I was feeding off that. I really wanted to strike him out, but he just kept grinding me. And I was trying to give him, you know, trying to execute pitches, and kept falling off, and unfortunately I walked him. But I love facing him. He's a great hitter. But you always got to believe that when you're on the mound that you're better than him.
The last time Washington hosted Major League Baseball's All-Star Game was in 1969, when the contest was staged at RFK Stadium. 49 years ago, the game was postponed to the following afternoon after heavy rains left the dugouts flooded and the field a sloppy mess. On Tuesday, torrential rain moved through downtown Washington shortly after 3 p.m. local time, more than 5 hours before the first pitch. The grounds crew worked hard on a hot, sticky, late afternoon here in Washington to ready the field. Los Angeles Dodgers All-Star Matt Kemp has played in some hot weather in Southern California. Hey, Matt! How do you compare the heat in D.C. to Los Angeles?
Way hotter. it's really, really, really humid out there. I think everybody was sweating, but we all were having a good time, and it's pretty exciting to be out there with you know, all my teammates and you know, my manager and some of my friends.
That's Los Angeles Dodgers outfielder Matt Kemp speaking here in Washington at the 89th annual Major League Baseball All-Star Game. The American League All-Stars defeated the National League All-Stars 8-6 in 10 innings. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Let's stay here in Washington, just a couple blocks from Nationals Park, where the All-Star Game was held, is the new $400 million Audi Field. Major League Soccer's D.C. United team officially opened the stadium 4 days ago. A sold-out crowd of more than 20,500 saw newly acquired Wayne Rooney and D.C. United beat the Vancouver Whitecaps 3-1. DC United is hoping Rooney and the new stadium will help spark the team to more victories after a slow start to the MLS season. Right now, DC United has the second worst record in the league with 3 wins, 7 losses, and 5 draws. Meanwhile, DC United's official charitable partner is DC Scores. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson tells us more about the nonprofit organization.
In the U.S. Capitol, kicking the ball and working as a team is the message DC Scores seeks to send to children and young people. The most important things the 18 to 15-year-old players are learning from their participation in DC Scores are teamwork and leadership. This nonprofit organization serves all elementary to middle public schools in the Capitol with after-school programs that help kids in need be more active and find friends. The program is free and has private sponsors. Ana Galeas Martinez is the program coordinator for DC Scores.
They come because they feel welcome. They feel happy, and they're not seeing TV the whole day and eating junk food. Like, here they have time to work out, have fun with friends.
Martinez has been with DC Scores for 9 years, first as a student and later as a coordinator. Based on her experience, she explains that when they join the free program, many of the children are not really motivated, but something changes over time.
For them, the more you have to work with is passing. So when passing with them, you do have to do communication. Without communication, but like a kid, like one cross to another, like, Rosalind, can you pass me the ball? I'm right here to your left. Like, they learn where to pass and communication wise. I feel like those kids, like that, little by little, they're developing to communicate.
The goal of the program is to teach the skills of soccer. DC Scores program manager Maria Maraquin also says it's important that kids have fun, which supports their academic and social development.
Mentally, it keeps a positive attitude, and I think that the kids are like starting to, you know, learn that here in summer camp when we're doing shooting drills or passing drills, and they're like, "Well, I can just kick the ball," and it's like, "No, there's a method to all this."
From the field to the class, some of the young participants, like Brianna Vigil and Emily Lobo Castillo, already love being part of a team.
I like soccer because it's this adrenaline rush you get when you're on the field and just playing. Like, as soon as you hear the whistle blow and the kickoff starts, it's like your heart just starts to pump and then your body just starts to move.
It gives me the opportunity to show other people, like, what they can do to not only be better in soccer, but to also be better as a person in general.
For nearly 25 years, DC Scores has shown that its soccer program helps kids stay active, improves their concentration, socialization, and grades, and makes them better people overall.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. As the French savor their second World Cup title, the nation's football team is changing old and negative stereotypes about immigrants and integration. But can this sense of pride and national unity really last? Lisa Bryant reports from Paris.
It's been a heady week for French soccer and for France. The French team's 4-2 victory over Croatia on Sunday marks the first time the country has won the World Cup in 20 years. French Algerian fan Karim Ben Mekhtar was among many celebrating in the streets and feeling proud to be French. They did a great job, he said, and went to the end. It's not easy to win by 4-2 in a World Cup. The team got a hero's welcome on Monday. Many fans lining the Champs-Élysées in Paris mirrored the origins of Les Bleus, as the team is known, multi-ethnic and multicultural. More than half the players are of immigrant origin. It seems like a throwback to 1998, the last time France won the World Cup. That team was nicknamed Black, Blanc, Beurre, Black, White, and North African. But the sense of social and racial unity two decades ago proved ephemeral. In 2005, there was nationwide rioting by ethnic immigrant youth from poor towns protesting police brutality. Then the spate of homegrown terrorist attacks, largely carried out by youngsters from North or sub-Saharan African backgrounds. And the rising popularity of France's far right.
C'est le visage d'une jeunesse. Contre laquelle quand même se concentre
Dominique Sopo is president of anti-discrimination group SOS Racisme. Today, he says, France's ethnic immigrant youngsters are broadly viewed with hostility. Many are cut off in the gritty suburbs known as banlieues, not just physically through lack of public transportation to get to places like Paris, but also symbolically and psychologically.
Mbappé!
For France's soccer team, sports has helped to erase those barriers. President Emmanuel Macron hosted the players at the Élysée Palace on Monday, but critics say he has not done enough for the other youngsters that Sopo is talking about. In May, he rejected a massive overhaul plan for the banlieue, settling for more modest measures. And like many countries in Europe, France is cracking down on immigration.
On insiste tout le temps sur les pannes de l'intégration en France. Mm-hmm. Mais la réalité de la France, c'est qu'en fait, l'intégration fonctionne plutôt bien.
Still, Education Minister Jean-Michel Blanquer believes the picture is brighter than critics claim. Integration, he told French radio, is not stalling. It's actually going pretty well. Many immigrants are rising socially, and their children go on to earn academic degrees their parents never could.
Là, on a l'expression de cette jeunesse qui est une jeunesse victorieuse, qui est une jeunesse sympathique.
Sopo of SOS Racisme agrees there is another face of immigration in France. It's les Bleus. They're winners, they're likable, and they're at ease with their immigrant origins. But he doubts this positive image will last unless political leaders and French society build on it. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Thanks, Lisa. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Meanwhile, former U.S. President Barack Obama has used France's victorious World Cup football team as a reference point for embracing diversity.
And it is a truth that is incompatible with any form of discrimination based on race or religion or gender or sexual orientation. And it is a truth that, by the way, when embraced, actually delivers practical benefits, since it ensures that a society can draw upon the talents and energy and skill of all its people. And if you doubt that, just ask the French football team that just won the World Cup. Because not all of those folks Not all of those folks looked like Gauls to me, but they're French.
Former U.S. President Barack Obama spoke in Johannesburg to mark the 100th anniversary of the birth of South African icon and civil rights leader Nelson Mandela. Meanwhile, the current winning image of the world champion French football team is having a positive business impact on retail stores in Paris. Joining us with more on that story is my VOA colleague, Gwen Ooten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Fans of the World Cup champions have flooded stores, hoping to snag the official jersey of their favorite players. The most sought after are Antoine Griezmann, N'Golo Kanté, and Kylian Mbappé. In fact, Mbappé is so popular, the Nike store on the Champs-Élysées is running out of the numbers 1 and 0 to print Mbappe's perfect number 10. And speaking of Nike and the number 10, Nike supplied shirts for 10 countries at this year's World Cup. That familiar Nike swoosh logo also decorated 3 of the 4 teams that made it to the semifinals, with Nike-sponsored France and Croatia making it to the finals. And according to Nike president Elliot Hill, it's the first time that's ever happened.
We've been in the game of football for over 20 years, and it's the first time that we've ever had an all-Nike final with both teams wearing Nike. In addition to the kits, we've had great success with our players. We have over 65% of the athletes wearing Nike football boots. That's more than all the other brands combined. So it's been a really successful World Cup for us, both on and off the pitch.
Elliot Hill says his company looks toward rapid expansion in China with a recently signed 10-year extension deal with the Chinese Super League. Hill hopes the new deal will lead to an increase in global soccer-related sales.
We see China overall as a tremendous growth opportunity for us as a company. And we believe sport and the lifestyle of sport will help us accelerate our business. So one of our biggest opportunities is to have our Chinese consumers connect with sport, and football will play a critical role in that. And a great example of us, of our commitment to it, is we just recently announced a 10-year partnership with the China Super League. And again, we believe that'll really help position the brand on field as authentic and help accelerate the game of football in China. So it's a tremendous opportunity for us.
The deal is reportedly worth $470 million U.S. dollars over 10 years. The Chinese Super League has become an attractive alternative for many players from top European leagues because of its reputation as a place to make a lot of money but play less stressful football. However, the Chinese hope to rebrand that image and envision their league as soon becoming one of the best in world football. And here's a fun fact. In 2015, Nike replaced rival company Adidas as the kit provider for China's national football teams. And while Nike leads the competition in overall sales, Adidas dominates in the European leagues, the U.S. Professional League, and is the official sponsor of the World Cup. Adidas outfitted 12 countries in this year's World Cup tournament and has supplied the ball for all World Cup matches since 1970. Its partnership with FIFA dates back more than 40 years, and for all events, FIFA officials, referees, volunteers, and the entire youth program wear Adidas products from head to toe. Hey, the World Cup fun facts just keep on coming. I'll have more sporty news for you tomorrow. Sunny, back to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
Australian basketball player Elizabeth Cambage gets a Sunny Side of Sports salute. Elizabeth is 6 feet 8 inches tall, or 2.03 meters tall, and Elizabeth certainly stood tall on Tuesday night in Dallas, Texas. Cambage scored 53 points to set a new WNBA single-game scoring record, leading the Dallas Wings to a 104-87 victory over the visiting New York Liberty. Speaking after the game, Liz Cambage said, and I quote, "I've had big numbers in China, I've had big numbers in Australia, and I've heard a lot of people say I could never have big numbers here in the WNBA, so I guess this game is for y'all." Liz Cambage is 26 years old, and as she says, she played previously in China and Australia. And Liz has some African roots. She was born in London to a Nigerian father and an Australian mother. Her parents separated when she was only 3 months old, and she moved to Australia with her mother. Liz Cambage, 53 points, a new WNBA single-game scoring record. Meanwhile, the game of basketball is finding fans in an unlikely place among young Tibetan Buddhist monks in the northern Indian state of Himachal Pradesh, where many monasteries are nestled along verdant Himalayan slopes. Several monasteries have changed centuries-old traditions and allowed monks to play sports. Anjana Pasricha reports from Himachal Pradesh, India.
After a morning spent in prayer and study at the Palpung Sherabling Monastery in the mountains of Himachal Pradesh, it is time for an invigorating game of basketball for these young Tibetan Buddhist monks. 15-year-old Setin Bhutia loves the game.
Without playing, there's no fun.
The monastery's principal, Kempo Pema Negi, explains why some monasteries have relaxed old traditions and built courts.
Doctors and ancient Indian texts say it's very important to play games. Then the earlier rules were changed and games are openly allowed. Now they play without fear. Games relax the children's minds and make them sharper.
Shedub Wangdi says sport must go hand in hand with studies.
It is like yoga. I won't become fat if I jump well.
At the basketball court in Bir Diru Sakya, another monastery in the vicinity, the game keeps young monks happily engaged. 12-year-old Funga Namgyal loves the sport.
I'll become taller and more flexible.
But that is not all.
I'm really happy when I score a goal.
For this 10-year-old, the game is simply fun.
When the bigger men have the ball, I like to snatch it.
Jigme Thinle, who teaches Buddhist philosophy at this monastery, enjoys coaching the young monks in the game, which has become his favorite since he learned it in college.
The child monks who are the whole day in class, this gives them some activity and mental happiness. In class too, when it is about to be 5 o'clock, they must be thinking of basketball.
Sports have come to stay because monks now believe they contribute to the goal of a calm mind and happy life.
If your body is healthy, your mind is healthy. And if that happens, then your life is healthy.
On the courts, some monks score a goal, some miss. Some prefer just sitting with a book or watching. And as prayer flags flutter, the game acquires a gentler aura on these Himalayan slopes. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Himachal Pradesh.
Thanks, Anjana. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. And I love that quote from the young Buddhist monk in Anjana's report. It is like yoga. I won't get fat if I jump well. I won't get fat if I jump well. Here's a little inside scoop from the old Sunny Man. You don't often see fat basketball players, just like you don't often see fat soccer players, because you got to run. You got to rev those engines. You got to burn calories. So you don't often see fat basketball players. I got to tell you, two long and sleek and very talented basketball players are headed to different teams next season in the National Basketball Association. The Toronto Raptors have traded their all-star guard DeMar DeRozan to the San Antonio Spurs for Kawhi Leonard, another all-star. Leonard is a former two-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year. He also won the NBA Finals Most Valuable Player Award a few years ago. So the Raptors trade DeMar DeRozan to the San Antonio Spurs in exchange for Kawhi Leonard. You're going to be hearing about that trade on social media. It was finalized earlier Wednesday. And that wraps up the July 18th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to producer Kwame Ofori. Thanks also to my VOA engineer, the pride of Sierra Leone, Sule Terawali. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government, through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, and the Malian government, have reinforced their long-standing partnership in the health sector with the launch of the One Health Platform, which will address diseases that pose health security threats, including those of zoonotic origin in Mali. During the launch ceremony in Bamako, Mali, on June 21st, Prime Minister Soumaïlou Boubaye Maïga expressed Mali's commitment to support the One Health initiative and thanked the U.S. government for their commitment to the success of the program. The One Health platform, which establishes and strengthens multi-sectoral coordination, is a key milestone in the Global Health Security Agenda, or GHSA, program, which was launched in 2014 to boost countries' capacity to prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease threats. In Mali, GHSA works to increase the government of Mali's ability to prevent, detect, and respond to emerging infectious disease threats through the One Health approach. The newly launched One Health platform will coordinate One Health activities in Mali and help promote a multi-sectoral approach to health security across the ministries of health, livestock, environment, and agriculture, as well as six other involved ministries. Recognizing that nearly 75% of newly emerging infectious diseases in people are zoonotic, the platform supports the development of multi-sectoral standard operating procedures to prevent, detect, and respond to zoonotic diseases and can support emergency preparedness and response activities. This platform is just one example of USAID's investment in collaboration with other U.S. government partners, including the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and National Institutes for Health, in activities to strengthen the human and livestock health systems of Mali, including in the surveillance, laboratory, reporting, emergency management, and workforce development sectors. It is an innovative multi-sectoral initiative for the prevention, detection, and control of health threats, including epidemics and other major endemics, said U.S. Ambassador Paul Folmsbee. The U.S. government has been proud to partner with the government of Mali on so many health initiatives, and we are particularly excited to see the One Health approach formalized with the One Health platform. We continue to look forward to working in partnership with all the sectors involved in human, animal, and environmental health to defend ourselves against outbreaks of pandemic potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music.
Wake up, dance this music.
Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.